And I made friends with the black man who ran the steamroller for the city of Greensboro. Steamroller was this enormous smoke belching thing, huge flat wheel on the front end of it, and two big wide ones on the back end of it. But this man could operate it so carefully, so precisely, that he could put a dime down on the street and drive right along right beside the gun and not displace it with this great powerful thing. I hesitate to put on the tape what everybody else called it, but why not? It's what everybody else called it. He was called Nigger John. And he somehow managed to live with that when he was in the presence of other whites, I suppose. He could live with that. How he was in his off time, I don't know. Because I didn't know him that way. I only knew him as this friend who came by after he had parked the thing in the city garage and walked home, and he happened to walk back on Arredondo Street, because Arredondo Street was the main highway, back and forth, foot pathway, bicycle, car, between the two black neighborhoods. One afternoon, I heard an ambulance siren wailing away, and I could tell that it was coming from the Oscar Thomas Funeral Home on Main Street, and it wasn't going up Main Street, which is where it usually went, or it disappeared and going in another direction. But it was coming closer, and it was obviously coming along Church Street, where it was the corner, obviously, the corner of Church Street and Main Street. It was coming west on, so I went running out to see what was going on. And it stopped right down at the end of Arredondo Street and Church Street, parked in the middle of the street. Of course, I had to go running there. And when I got there, there was John, lying in the middle of the sidewalk in a pool of his own blood. He had been sitting on the curved stone fenceway, big, big, powerful fence, right at the corner of the Whitstock House, the other anchor house now in the Pleasant Street Historic District as this house. This house and the Whitstock were the two anchor houses for the Historic District coming into being. And he'd been sitting there, and some drunk had failed to make the corner. John was lying there in his pool of blood. I think it was the left foot had been severed and was still hanging over the Achilles tendon. This I saw when they picked him up to put him on stretcher. But that took place sometime later, because this was the pivotal thing. The Oscar Thomas ambulance refused to pick him up and put him on a stretcher and take him to the hospital because he was black. And you had to wait. You can't take him. You have to wait till the White and Jones ambulance gets here. And that's what I heard. And there was my friend lying there. And something flooded through me that had never flooded through me before. And I saw that, and I saw it as just pure out of evil. This is awful. And there was nothing I could do except sit there and witness it. And John, in his agony, I don't know whether he could feel anything or not. He just simply prayed and clapped his hands together, lying there. They didn't try to make him comfortable. They didn't try to stem the blood. They didn't do anything. It was such a horrible thing to see there. And I wanted to beat on these people, but I didn't have that nature. That was not my nature to raise up my fist and pound on his body. So mentally, I was pounding on him somehow. And then finally, the White and Jones ambulance came, and then he was very tenderly picked up. But as they picked him up, the foot, which was still in the shoe, was dangling by his Achilles cord. That picture is so indelible, the color of that blood. And there in front of that house, I can't pass it without seeing it anytime. It's just there. Because the stone is still moved slightly out of the way. Nobody ever pushed it back. I don't think anybody ever noticed it, except me, that stone was out of the way because of the car hit, and he was between the car and the stone. Whoever ran into him was so drunk. There was no malevolence there. It was just ignorance and stupidity and drunkenness. Just wanton nonsense. But the acts of unkindness there were not wanton, they were deliberate. And they were of a mindset that I was yanked from in that moment, and I can never forget it. What my actions were after that moment are the actions of a little boy who was confused and whose memory of that would get eclipsed by other things. And I would revert to being the same little boy because it was always an ambivalence from that point forward. Every time the need for an ambivalence presented itself. And what I'm trying to get at is what can happen in a Southern kid who grew up in a Confederate household where it was the pride and joy, and my grandmother's brothers and sisters were all referred to the father as this great man and so forth and so forth. And they were always worried who was going to get the sword, that kind of thing. I don't think I ever stopped wanting the sword. I just never did want it. And it took a long time for me for that to surface. And then, of course, all of my friends hadn't had this
epiphany.
Exactly, okay. The word. Thank you. That's exactly the word. It wasn't truly an epiphany. But like epiphanies in childhood, it's just went back below the surface. But it emerged at crucial points in my life when I needed it, when a decision had to be made about things. There was always that tugging at me. Why did I have that epiphany as a child? The anguish that I felt for John was not directed at my family. It was directed at these monsters who let him sit there. He could have died and all of that, you know. In effect, John did die. He just didn't pass away. He hung on. There was nothing he could do for the city. There was nothing he could do for anybody. Nobody could put that foot back on. They put him in a wheelchair and gave him a box of pencils. And he spent the rest of his life wheeling by here on the wheelchair, going downtown to the University Avenue and Main Street, and sitting under the awning in front of the Woolworth Five and Dime, selling pencils. I never saw him actively try to sell a pencil to anybody. It was just the box that was there on the edge of his chair, wheelchair. And he nodded, he spoke to people, and people stopped and talked to him, and he carried on some kind of a social life there. I don't see how he could possibly have lived on selling pencils. That's what he did. Maybe that's he got tobacco money. But there he was, and he lived out his life there on that corner, a corner that he had paved.